Tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Here we are for another week. Colin Ford joining me across the panel, and what a week it is. Launches aplenty as both Holden and Kmart, the Paul Dumbreck team, or the Dumbreck team, now being launched as the Kmart team, and just an absolute plethora of news. We're also going live to Warrnambool Raceway for the second and final night's coverage of the classic, the grand annual classic Warrnambool race, which is culminating with a fantastic effort. We'll first be speaking to Wayne Beans from Warrnambool, and then taking live descriptions right throughout the hour we have here on Inside Motorsport. So we're looking forward to a fantastic night's racing. We hope you'll stay with us for that. But Colin, first of all, the V8 supercar launches.
Well, that's right. This week the V8 supercars have been doing their thing of showing off their new looks for the 2000 season, and they've been as busy as they can be. In the case of the Larry Perkins Castrol Racing team, they've got themselves a brand new VT Commodore. This one, new one built for Russell Ingall. New design, new roll cage, the whole nine yards. A very interesting silver, sort of a combination between the silver scheme that Russell was running last year and the usual red and green that we expect to see from Castrol. As well, the Paul Dumbreck team, which took over from Gibson Motorsport, they've got Stephen Richards and Greg Murphy lining up in mainly Kmart-sponsored cars, but with subsidiary sponsorship from Castrol, PlayStation, Fit and Car Products, Stanley's, Maguire's, Exide and the like. So it's all very go for them. And of course the Holden Racing team, they've gone Holden red with the red line on the bonnet and looking very, very dramatic. As always, they've had their graphic designers working overtime getting the car to look exactly 100%. So it has been a very big week for these new cars. Of course there's other people sort of dropping out around the place. We've heard that David Truckee Parsons isn't going to be running in the Shell Championship this year because of problems with his major sponsor, but it has been a week of really launches everywhere. The other thing, of course, launches in Formula 1 as well. I must admit, I've seen the new Jaguar this year and it looks tremendous. And apparently the hot word already is that if somebody wants to buy merchandise, the one that's going to be the biggest in demand, probably even outstripping Ferrari, will be Jaguar.
Yeah, it is the first time Jaguar has made an appearance in a Formula 1 event, and Melbourne will be the host of it. Down there in Melbourne is the editor-in-chief of Motorsport News, Phil Branigan, and of course Larry Perkins, the man who has really set the V8 supercar standard for production and manufacture. He's won the most V8 Bathursts of any of the teams, and with three in the current regulations, I should specify. And he once again has done it. It's also the lead story here in Motorsport News this week, along with those Formula One launches.
Well, yes, it is. Larry's unveiled his new car. We've got exclusive pictures, the first look at the car a couple of weeks before he runs it to Phillip Island, and certainly looks different. He's got a number of ideas from overseas race cars, and I think Larry's been pulling out copies of Motorsport News and Autosport and going through it and looking at what the guys overseas are doing.
Certainly has. He's certainly got himself a few radical ideas there, and no doubt he's trying to create an even bigger weapon to belt the Holden Racing Team around the ears.
Well, either that or Larry's taken some of his hard-earned millions from the last 15 years of touring car racing and invested them in Palmer Tube Mill stock. Because this thing's got so much tube in it, it's amazing. He swears to me blind it's going to weigh about 1350 kilos, so he must know what he's doing. But gee, it's strong. He's gone about four times stiffer in his last three cars, so we'll wait and see whether it all works or not.
Then again, given some of the big hits the cars have taken last year, if you look what happened down at Phillip Island last year, then at Calder with Craig Lowndes' huge accident, I suppose any team manager, owner who's building a new car who doesn't invest in making that driver sell as safe as possible probably is not doing the right thing by his driver.
Oh, no question about that. there's a big emphasis on safety in race car design these days, and rightly so. And the latest thing I've seen from overseas now is a carbon fibre open wheeler type capsule, which actually goes inside touring cars, and you mount your steering wheel and your pedals and your seat and all that sort of stuff in there. So you're almost in a survival cell. But speaking of Craig Land's accident, was I the only one who realised in the video footage that when the drivers rushed over to Craig's car, which was on its roof, of course, lying on the side of the Thunderdome, Larry walked past, had a look at the bottom of the car, and kept going. You got to see the suspension of the car.
Well, from what I understand, there was a rather good trade in the photographs from a couple of photographers who got the shots of the car as it was flipping upside down.
No comment.
Yeah, there's always no comment on those sort of things, but I'm sure there's a few teams out there who were going and saying, did you get shots at the bottom of that car as it went past?
Let's just say Phil Brennigan's watching the Daytona 500 in the grandstand this year from photographs there.
Anyway. Maybe. Maybe.
Look, talking about the Daytona 500, Speed Weeks is about to kick off, and you've got it all covered with the previews. The Rolex 24 Hour, which is a precursor to all the long-distance sports car events, and particularly the precursor to the event of 1,000 years, which we'll have down here on the former Formula One circuit, now the Australian sports car circuit. And it is going to be an interesting one as well, because we'll see the much-muted General Motors return to sports car racing with the Caddy on the track for the first time.
Yeah, the Cadillac Northstar. It's going to be an interesting year with in endurance races. Of course, it was called the American Le Mans Series. There's now people calling it the Global Le Mans Series, and now it's kind of politically incorrect. We're just calling it the Le Mans Series, I guess.
Well, you can't call it the World Le Mans Series, because then Bernie Ecclestone gets a crack at it.
Yeah, Bernie owns everything. Bernie owns my house. And,
well, it does person. If you're not careful, anyway.
No, he's a wonderful person. He's a lovely, caring, sharing human being, and I say that because I want a media pass for Albert Park. But, we've got Gary Watkins going to Daytona. Probably the most interesting race in years, despite the fact that manufacturers like Mercedes-Benz and Nissan and so on have pulled out of enduro racing. Cadillac versus Audi, who are doing the whole series. And a whole range of cars which are available for the first time to privateers. For instance, privateers running Panos cars. Don Panos running his own two-car Ford-back team. Lola have a new car. Reynard have a new car. You name it. There's plenty happening in sports car racing. And some veteran drivers going back. For instance, Derek Bell is driving at Daytona this year for the first time in 2 years. So.
Also, Butch Leisinger is the lead man for Cadillac's re-emergence. And Butch Leisinger, no stranger to American sports car racing.
Well, yeah, absolutely not. And speaking of Australian interest, David Brabham. You know, people say he was robbed by Elliott Forbes Robertson last year for the 99 ALMS title, and will David be the man to beat this year without Eric Bernard next to him? So we'll have to wait and see on that. But it should be a good race. I've been getting in endurance mode. For the people listening in Melbourne, they'll know that the Le Mans movie was on yesterday afternoon, and the great race was on last night. So it was just motor racing united at my place.
It was a fantastic, and having spent a bit of time with, of course, your boss over there, Chris Lambden, last year, it was amazing to see the differences in the 19 years that had passed since I'd been at the track, well, since the film was made and when I was at the track. Quite remarkable to think that in those 19 years, 20 years this year since that movie was made, and I do know that they're planning a lot of things to tie in with the movie and this year's event.
Well, yes, it's nice to make those comparisons. I've never been to Le Mans. I'm sure I think I'm going this year, but I'm intending to go sometime in the future, but I'm so glad you enjoyed yourself.
Hey, but guess what? You get to enjoy, instead of the French summer, you get to enjoy Canberra on that same weekend.
Fantastic. Looking forward to that.
The coldest date of the year, you're going to be in Canberra.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be that cold. I'm taking everything I own with me as far as the wardrobe is concerned, so we'll be ready.
Hey, we're locals.
What am I going to complain about?
Yeah. The beauty of it is we'll be able to show you all the local spots there. And
what sort of spots?
Oh, the good eating spots.
Try again.
There's plenty of those. But of course, as well, this week, big thing, of course, all the launches in Formula One speak. You know, Jensen Button gets the seat, Compact comes out. And of course, the big push now appears to be that if these guys are going to lose their tobacco dollars, they're all going looking for IT and internet dollars.
They certainly are. What have we got? We've got Compact in there, we've got Hewlett Packard, we've got Nortel, Lucent Technologies. I mean, you name a NASDAQ company, and that's the stock exchange in America that's boomed 80% in the last year.
Well,
almost all in F1.
Yes, that's right. And if you looked at, there was an interesting piece I saw on one of the news channels, one of the news channels that I was watching, about the Super Bowl coming up early tomorrow morning our time. And that was that last year, I think two dot-com companies ran 30-second commercials, which cost them about $20 to $30 million a pop. And just by running a 30-second ad in the Super Bowl coverage, it got the site's traffic up by like 5,000 or 6,000% because the ratings are so high. And this year, evidently more than half of the advertising are dot-com companies that are trying to, you know, increase their market share on the internet traffic. That culminates with Northern Light being the major sponsor for the next 5 years. They've paid $50 million to be the major sponsor of the Indy Racing League. That one announced at the head of the opening race in the championship, who I think it was Robbie Buell that took the victory at Walt Disney World Speedway earlier this morning.
And how did Al go?
Al had a disappointing start. I haven't got the press release in front of me, but he had a disappointing start to his career, but is hoping to get things back on track before round number two, which I think is Pikes Peak, but I'm not 100% sure.
All right, good to see Al carrying on from where he left off at Penske.
Yeah.
Sorry, he's not listening to this.
Now it's his own dollars that are funding his disappointment.
True, unfortunately so. But anyway, there's plenty going on in the USA. What have we got to do with some Formula 1 cars? Some minor teams haven't launched their Formula 1 cars like McLaren and Ferrari yet.
Yeah, given time.
Interesting to note, McLaren's old car still faster than everybody else's 2000 cars in testing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, car testing's going gangbusters. And we still have some teams to roll out. There's supercars here, so.
Well, Paul Morris, who we're speaking to a little bit later in the show, he's doing his launch on Wednesday to announce his sponsors, and he's got two new sponsors he was telling me a little bit earlier today, which are going to see him on both the Super Touring and Supercar.
Well, that's good, because also on Wednesday, Bradley Jones is doing his. He's going to roll out his AU Falcon, which the team acquired from the Tony Longhurst camp, and has been severely modified since. So, interesting to note that both Morris and Jones are going to launch their cars on the same day.
Yep, that's just what you want.
Well, just what I don't want. It's bad for motorsport news and it's good for our opposition, so these are the way these things work out.
Don't these people know what week they've got to launch by? They've got to launch by Tuesday on the other week.
Well, I've spoken to basically every touring car team in Level 1 and said, you know, let me know when your cars are rolling out. And people have actually rung me up and said, you've got four Commodores in this issue. There are Fords out there. And my response has been, well, tell me where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Ford have been a little quiet so far, and I've got to say, if any Ford people are listening, it hasn't been nearly as coordinated as the Holden launches.
No, it hasn't, and one of the funny things is right when they made the announcement that Craig Baird was going to be taking the Jason Bright spot, Siegel Media, who looks after Ford, they ring me up, they go, you want to speak to Craig? Yeah, do. Okay, here's the number. Craig doesn't turn his phone on for the next 2 months.
It's a little unfortunate. Like I said, Holden have everyone on the same page. Everyone knows what the other teams are doing. There's secrets in the cars, but there's no secrets about their launches.
Mm.
Ford just don't seem to be coordinated, and I guess that's one of the things that's going to have to change through the year, apart from the performance of the cars. I think this season the VTs and the AUs are going to be much closer on the track because the Ford teams have a handle on their hardware now. But I think Ford have to give their actual racing identity a bit of a makeover.
Mm. And the other thing that is getting underway, we spoke about Speed Week, but also the NHRA have got some interesting moves afoot. And a lot of American drag racing news, and Gerald McDonnan also is doing the hard work in the drag racing news in Australia, which has seen multiple events, a real different look to the championship this year, with multiple title events being held in different states all on the same weekend, rather than having the single night of four divisions all going after a Christmas tree.
Yeah, there is a different look to drag racing this year. We've had a tremendous response from competitors in the last race at Calder. And I must say, most of it was negative. Unfortunately, Calder seem to have a problem at the moment getting their race meetings completed as far as drag racing is concerned. And that's a problem, because they've got the Nationals coming up. They've got the Nationals coming up the week after Phillip Island. So it's two of the biggest events of the year in Victoria on the same week, and there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, that's right. But it was sort of no surprise when I read the reports to see that Gary Phillips had once again taken the win last weekend at, of course, the latest round of the Top Alcohols, where he took the Lucas Oils Products Alcohol Dragster to its second win in a week at Calder Park. And, of course, that leaves him at the top of the tree with 200 points, so two wins from two starts, followed by Mark Brew, Dean Oakey, who's doing a great job this season, Frank Inty, Tom Easton, Matthew Featon, Wayne Newby, Steve Harker and Steve Reed are rounding out the racing there. And Jason Lee is still on top in the Pro Stock Motorcycles when he was able to take first round wins, and I think they only got through the first second round.
Yeah.
Not making the finals, as you were saying.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing, but yeah, I think the alcohol thing will shake up. It's not often you see Harker and Newby that far down the pecking order, and there's a lot of races to go before they decide the championship.
All right. What is happening with NASCAR? We got to hear your dulcet tones and see you on Channel 10 last weekend.
Yep.
But the next round was cancelled, which should have been, I think, this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And, well, still no reports on when we're going to see the big V8s back on the dome.
Good question. I really don't know what's happening, I'm afraid. I wish I could give people some good news. As far as I know, the next race meeting is scheduled for Wanneroo Park, all sponsorship conditions aside, over there in Perth. I know that Barry Blake's put a lot of work into trying to get the field over there. Calder Park management are intending to do so. There's been another change in management out there as far as the race series is concerned. So I ask questions. I get told people don't know. I don't know. I'm optimistic about the future of NASCAR, but I'm not sure what that future's going to be. So.
All right. And, of course, in the latest edition of Motorsport News, which is out there right now, of course, you have all the sprint car news from the conclusion of the World Series up to this weekend's Warrnambool and King of the Ring Classics, with the build-up to the Australian title at Speedway City next weekend.
Absolutely. It's an interesting time. There's going to be a real trail of carnage, I think, when the national title for sprint cars is decided at Adelaide in a couple of weekends' time. So that's going to be huge. But, yeah, it's Speedway season. It's drag racing season. Interesting times. We've got a bit of a preview of the NHRA season. Like we said before, Larry Perkins' car and the latest Formula One launches. And we actually thought there wasn't, when we started the issue that's on the newsstands now, we thought there wasn't much news around, and in the end we couldn't jam it all in, so busy time of year.
And of course the big thing which is running in between now and the Grand Prix is the competition for a lucky reader or two to win a GP hot lap with Brock or Moffat.
That's right. When I see the cover line, win a ride with a legend of your choice, I keep on thinking they're talking about me, but they're not. It's Brock and Moffat. I mean, gee whiz, a rivalry that goes back 30 years. We've got Holdens, we've got Feltons. All you got to do is snip out the coupon on page 5, and some people have said, hey, hang on, do I have to have 4 Alan Moffats if I want to go with Alan Moffat? No, you don't. You can have anyone. We ring you up when it's all over and say, who do you want to go with? So you can be in a Falcon, you can be in a Tirana, you can see these guys at work, and you get to go around Albert Park. And they're already starting to psych each other out.
Yeah.
Brock brings up Moffat, Moffat brings up Brock, and they both ring us up and complain.
It's actually very interesting to see how those two guys, even after all these years, they still have that little needle that just sort of sits there. But it is such a... It's intense, but it's also got a high degree of friendliness in there as well, underlying it.
Yeah, Marvin told me a couple of weeks ago he was going to take it easy. You're right.
Yeah.
Like, he used to take it easy.
Yeah, like, can we ever expect Moffat to take it easy?
Yeah. Mr. Intense.
Yeah. Brock, he'll just have his herbal tea and then he'll be laid back and cool, but I tell you what, once he gets in that car and the eyes go on...
And Brock speak, he'll have a red hot go, but it is great to see these guys going out there and getting the opportunity.
Mm.
That's something.
And also the sports cars there too, the classic sports cars of the 60s and 70s, that's going to be an interesting one as well. I've got sports cars on the brain at the minute.
Well, I was having this discussion with Frank Maddich, who I am name dropping again, but he didn't know about that race that's coming up for the Grand Prix for, you're talking about the Can-Am race.
Yeah, that's
race.
It.
He didn't know. He wants to go out there and build a car. And drive it. Like, speaking of legends, you know, he's going to be at the Motorsport Awards, but Frank Maddich, you know, man, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, you're not wrong there. But the other thing is, I got the official press kit, and politics is great in motorsport up to a point, but my official press kit, the latest one that I got, which was the summer update, you're probably familiar with it now that I've...
From the Grand Prix Corporation.
From Grand Prix Corporation. Right. Heaps about the Can-Am race, heaps about other support races, the two-seaters. And I think there's going to be a number of two-seaters there this year with McLaren and a couple of the other teams. I think Arrows have got a two-seater and one other team have also developed a two-seater car. But be that as it may, a lot of talk about the Grand Prix and this, that and the other thing. No talk about V8 supercars.
On the program?
On that publicity flyer. I think that's an interesting story that...
I didn't pick that up. Now that you mention it, you're right.
Are they trying to tell somebody something?
Well, like, you know that supercars are bigger than Formula One. Just ask Tony.
That's right. They get bigger crowds. Just ask Tony.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the V8 supercars on the bill, they wouldn't get anybody to any of those other races.
Oh, well, that was my classic. We get the crowd for Melbourne is one comment I heard at one stage.
Well, Tony, if you're listening, I just want you to know that my name is Phil Brannigan and I said none of this, all right?
Look, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, Phil. The latest edition on the new self is a fantastic one, and for a fortnight when there was no sport on there, you certainly did fill the pages, and of course, all the people wanting to catch up with the World Rally Championship news, the complete results from round number one.
Yeah,
which,
the Peugeot Chamozzle. Unbelievable.
If I was Peugeot's chief engineer, I think I'd be quietly finding a little corner, a little cafe somewhere and drinking myself into oblivion. Currently.
Well, I'll go and tell him you worked at McDonald's down the road from here now.
Oh, that's why your burgers are coming through extra crispy.
That's why they have French fries.
Thank you, Phil Brannigan.
Pleasure.
Well, culminating in two nights of exciting racing at the Premier Speedway in Warrnambool. Wayne Bean joins us on the line now, and Wayne, a very exciting night, this final night of the Classic.
Yeah, thanks very much, Craig. Yeah, it is, and we've got great weather down here for the Sunday night of the Classic. Finished pretty late last night, but certainly some fantastic racing.
No cars, as we speak, are just going out for warm-up and engine starts, and great news for people who can't get to Warrnambool tonight is live commentary from the box, going out over the World Wide Web at www.sprintcarworld.com.au.
Yeah, and Daniel Beard and Steve Green up there doing that, and doing a fine job. Anyone that's not been on the web can catch up with the Sprint Car World, and they'll be right into it right now.
Yes, that's right. But for people who want to catch up with the audio, of course, that's available as well. After they finish with Inside Motorsport tonight, they can lock straight into some great sprint car action. And talking about great sprint car action, well, you've already seen really one night of it there at Warrnambool, and of course the King's Royal, or the King's Round, out there at Mount Gambier the night before, also fantastic racing.
Yeah, the Americans dominated over there, of course, with Johnny Schott. Gary Madsen was very unlucky and had a lot of big lead in the final, and then ran into a bit of a problem. He had to pull out, and the Americans got first, second and third. Johnny Schott's Danny Smith got second, and Randy Hannigan ended up coming in third.
Has been a fantastic fantastic year of sprint car racing, and with the Americans doing a good job, but in the USA-Australia Challenge, it was Brooke Tatnall who ended up the victor.
In the Australian-American Challenge?
Yeah.
Just looking up, yes, Brooke Tatnall, sorry about that, Craig, but yeah, Brooke Tatnall ended up taking the win, and very unlucky in the final of the 25-lap A main here on the Saturday night. He started out around about position 9, and he worked his way forward pretty quick, and he was coming up behind Danny Lasoski and Chad Kemenar, who ended up actually winning the race, and looked like rounding them up, and then we had a red light stoppage with a big rollover on the highway corner for anyone that's been to Premier Speedway, just coming out of turn 2. And brought the red light on. Unfortunately, his tyres went cold and just couldn't keep that momentum going. He ended up running fourth.
Mm. The racing tonight in fine conditions means the track's going to probably dry out a little bit in the later part of the night, and that should play into the Americans' hands. And, of course, no one can forget Skip Jackson, who's been lurking right there all weekend.
Yeah, he's been sitting back. Skip Jackson's going along fairly well at the moment. I've got the update of points sitting here right in front of me at the moment. And Skip Jackson's actually sitting in fourth place, and he's currently sitting on 173 points. And our leader is Chad Kemenar, who's on 186. So Skip Jackson just 13 points behind. But bearing in mind, between Skip and Chad, we've got Danny Lasoski in second, and he has been a big boom for this race, and the crowds have come out in their droves. Very big crowd here already. He's there in second place on 180, And then we've got Kerry Madsen on 173, then Skip. And then Brooke Tatnell right behind Skip on 173 also.
Yes, and one thing about this meeting is the number of Americans you've been able to lure. After Lasalski went home for a wedding last weekend, he's come back to Australia to run at the Classic. And I think all told, about 7 United States drivers making up the 61 cars that I think started last night.
Yes, it ended up being just dropped back to around about 56. There was 5 cars pulled out probably after damage over in Mount Gambier. But all the big names are here. As you mentioned, we have got 7 Americans, Chad Kemenar, Danny Lasalski. We go down to Johnny Schott, who, I must tell you, last night absolutely shattered the one-lap record here at Premier Speedway. He went around in 10.53 flat, and he had 2 laps to do that in, and both laps were identical 10.53s, and very unusual.
And, of course, he's had a fantastic season driving in the Kirky team from Western Australia, and very dominant in the opening part of the season, and just struggled a little bit when he came east.
Yes, he's struggled a little bit, but he's starting to find his form now, and, like these Americans down here, they're very quick, very quick.
A lot of comments being made about how tough the World of Outlaw Series is making these Americans. Years ago, when they came out for the World Series, they just weren't adapting as quick as what you would expect, with the exception of the season pros like your Kinsers and what have you. But now, even someone who is like Donny Schott's, a rookie last year, and coming over here again, has really adapted so quickly. Lasalski, a seasoned professional, has adapted almost instantly.
Yes, he has, and he just talking to him there last night, Danny Lasalski, he's very, very happy with the Premier track. And we've also got a commentator here by the name of Johnny Gibson, who does the World of Outlaws. We've got John Cobby across from South Australia, who's a professional commentator. But Johnny Gibson and Danny Lasalski, Johnny Schott, they all absolutely love this track. They think it's the best track they've been to in Australia so far, and that's great to hear from guys like of the likes of Danny Lasalski and Johnny Schott.
Yes, it is indeed. Well, Wayne, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and we wish you all the best for a great night's racing there at Premier Speedway in Warrnambool. And I guess one thing we're going to know at the end of the night is it is going to be the absolutely best form guide we are going to see towards the national championship this year.
It certainly is, yeah, and these guys do use this race as a lead up to the national championships. And for all you people up there in Canberra, if you want to catch it on www.sprintcarworld.com.au, you can catch it up there tonight. And we're certainly looking forward to a great final down here.
Yes, thanks very much, Wayne. Being joining us there from Warrnambool.
No worries. Thank you, Craig.
Yes, and this week, as we mentioned earlier on, the 20-year-old British driving sensation Jenson Button was confirmed as Ralph Schumacher's teammate for the BMW Williams Formula One team, which meant that, of course, Alessandro Zanardi, it's bye-bye for him from Williams. Apparently there was a payout deal there, I believe it was worth around about $7 million to Zanardi, but it means he won't be able to race for any other Formula One teams this year. However, at the same time, $7 million is not bad pay for sitting on your backside and doing nothing. But
I could put on another 10 kilos for $7 million, I'm sure.
That's
right. I'm going to do that without the $7
million. Yep. But the name of the game is that already he has been approached, apparently, by a number of kart teams who are looking for him, and apparently he received an offer from an IRL team.
Why wouldn't you go there? Have you got $7 million in your pocket?
Yep.
Go race at Indianapolis 500 just for the hell of it.
Mm.
Another story that came through the F1 office is that Damon Hill is being sued by his former pilot for wrongful dismissal. Daniel Higgins is taking action in Ireland as he allegedly, as he alleges his dismissal in January last year was a breach of the country's Minimum Notice Act. A tribunal was told last week that Hill had lost confidence in his pilot because he sweated profusely on landing. Higgins claimed that this related to an incident on a trip to France when the jet developed a major malfunction and deposited its fuel from the engine. Another item from this was in a curious legal case being held in Ireland, a pilot who once flew Damon Hill's private jet is suing for unfair dismissal. In Australian, it's $130,000. So two different stories of the same incident, and both looking quite interesting. One's a regular pilot, and the other one's a once once only.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be flying for Damon Hill. I made a few landings out of my time when I was flying, that I was definitely sweating a lot. Some of the airports around the place you'd have to sweat to get in safely. But the other news this week, of course, is the fact that Jos Verstappen has been signed to partner Pedro de la Rosa with the Arrows team. Jos Verstappen, I suppose, a bit of a journeyman of Formula One. He's been around to quite a number of the teams over the years. Benetton, Syntec, Tyrrell, Stewart, did a lot of work for Honda Racing Development, their test team. So he's been signed up, and hopefully he might bring something across to the Arrows team there. And that means, of course, Mark Webber will stick with Formula 3000. And I'd say by the look of things, he'll probably end up with the testing drive for Arrows. So that looks good for him for the future.
The other thing is there's a conflict over Mike Faxwell's age on debut in Formula 1. We were just talking about Jenson Button, who is going to become the youngest driver to race a youngest British driver to race a Formula 1. But evidently there is some controversy about the age of Mike Faxwell when he debuted, and it's interesting to see all these records start coming out and all these people jump up. I was, 16 and 321 days when I drove my first race.
It depends what you had put on the paperwork when you originally started to drive, and if you actually sort of bumped your age up so you could get in, but you're actually underage, which often happens with some of those people.
Oh, yes, more often than not.
Mm.
Also, during the week, if I can jump the gun once again, which I've just done, it was quite interesting to see that Ferrari's last world champion in Jody Scheckter has reached the ripe old age of 50 during the week. He also was the only driver ever to win a Formula One race in a six-wheel car in 1976. He took the Tyrrell six-wheeler to a Vin in Sweden.
Yeah, the P34. Of course, interesting thing there, of course, his son, Toby, who's started to get into motor racing.
F3 he was running last year.
Yeah, and I think he's staying there, or he's trying to move up to Formula 3000. So, again, could be another second-generation racer. Of course, the other news this week, of course, that Queensland Raceway, the creditors this week, voted to liquidate the circuit's assets and to wind up Motorsport Queensland. So, very much the future of Queensland Raceway has been placed in further doubt. Apparently, there is a consortium led by Subaru GT production racer Gary Dean, whose construction company, Gary Dean Constructions, built the circuit and remains one of the Motorsport Queensland unsecured creditors. They're trying to get in and take over things. So, of course, that leaves things a bit up in the air in terms of races that are scheduled, but a number of the V8 supercars...
Because Lakeside hasn't been sold yet, from memory.
Right. But it still means that Queensland Raceway, things are up in the air for their July race date and also the Queensland 500. There's the July 2 date, and there's also a V8 lights round that's going to be up there, so they're going to look what's going to happen there. Apparently they'll discuss that at the opening round at Phillip Island. The other side of things there, of course, is that a number of the teams have been testing up there, including the Cat Racing team and some of the others, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Well, joining us on the line, a man who had a great season in 1999 and is looking to capitalise on that in the year 2000, that is Paul Morris. Paul, congratulations. The BMW trophy for the top independent of the year is a prize that you must be extremely satisfied with.
Yeah, certainly, especially with the amount of cash that comes with it. It sure comes in handy.
It does mean that you'll be campaigning both a V8 supercar and the BMW in the Super Touring cars next season, which is going to be seeing you racing every weekend of the winter months.
Yeah, that's obviously a big commitment, but with the team now, I think, winning the championship and winning Bathurst and doing so well in Macau, we need to make the step up, so running the two categories is... our next goal, and I think we can be competitive in both.
Wednesday you have the official team launch of the supercar team. Is that going to encompass, if I'm not trying to pry too much, is that going to encompass a sponsorship that covers both cars, or is it this launch going to be just for the supercar arrangements?
But we're launching two new sponsors, and they'll be both on each car.
And I guess this for you is going to be a big boost, because having to battle along with minimal sponsorship as you did last year is it's going to give you a different sort of focus and allows you to do a lot more development work.
Yeah, I suppose that's a good point. We obviously the more money you get, the more you can put into the team, and you always find somewhere to spend it. But as you said, especially with the V8 supercar, you have to sort of paddle your own canoe a bit and do your own development, and that's what we plan to do.
The V8s are cars that you have had a little bit of familiarity with. Is there a lot of driving style difference between the V8 and the BMW?
Yeah, there is. They're a completely different thing. Obviously, they acquire a little bit different technique, and they have to set them up different. But with the technology today, with the data acquisition and that you can get, you can really see what the car's doing, and really the driver's just another part of the machinery, so to speak. So you just got to adapt and make sure you get the most out of it.
At Macau, you talked about having a good run there at the end of the season. That probably turned a lot of heads internationally as to how you're going, particularly being a privateer up against the likes of the factory teams that were there. Have you had much interest from overseas, perhaps, to get you over there to do some touring car racing?
No, not at all, really. I think there's touring car racing over there is sort of going in about five different directions at the moment, so no one really... I'm a bit surprised to see how did we get at the start of the meeting when we had the press conference where we didn't sort of get a mention. It was just we were going to come fourth or fifth and everyone else was going to finish up the front, but we surprised a few people, but I don't think they want to get us over there.
Mm. And for this season, obviously campaigning both cars means that you're going to be doubling up with transporting and really you're going to be running two separate crews, I would imagine, just so you can make each event to get there on practice days so you can get the testing done.
Yeah, there'll be sort of two completely separate teams. Obviously, there'll be a bit of technical staff or crossover between the two projects, but basically they're two different teams, as you said.
And I guess you're well into the process of getting the cars ready, and I guess most importantly the supercar, because that's the one you're going to be doing the most work to sort of get on the pace with.
Yeah, we haven't actually tested yet, so we've actually had the car in the workshop and gone through it and made sure it's up to our sort of standard of preparation, and we hope to get out next week and do some testing and get a few rounds of the championship under our belt and then see where we need to go development-wise.
Mm. Now, what group category are you going in? I don't think you were planning to go in as Group 1, so obviously you're going to be running in Group 2 or 3.
The level of your franchise doesn't really mean anything anymore. There's no privateer or category. If you're in the V8 Lights or you're in the Shell Championship, so basically, if you're a level 1 or a level 2, you just get a bit more appearance money.
Okay, so they've sort of dropped that, the crossing of the categories then.
Yeah.
All right then, Paul. It's been a pleasure to catch up with you. Congratulations on the BMW Tourist Trophy, because that award has been given out to a large number of drivers who we now recognise as top sports car drivers, top touring car drivers, with fantastic careers, and getting a name on a trophy like that does sort of put you in that sort of next ranking, I would imagine.
Yeah, we nearly had our name on it in 97, but the Bathurst exclusion obviously dropped us in the points a fair bit, so it was good to actually come back and get it for sure.
Well, happy 2000. You're going to be a very busy man. We look forward to seeing your results on both Channel 7 and Channel 10 as the telecasts arrive.
Okay, thanks, mate.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what's happening there with Paul Morris. Of course, BMW, I think, is still reeling in a bit of shock, the fact that one of their long-time drivers, Joe Winkelhock, has left BMW to drive and open the new DTM 2000 series in Germany. Winkelhock, who has won the 1999 Le Mans 24 Hours with BMW last June, has severed his ties with BMW, so that, you know, that's a case where that he's driven with them, winning the British Touring Car Championship in 1993, winning the German STW Cup for them, and being, from as far as I can remember, going back to probably about 1988 or even earlier, that Joe Winkelhock had been driving for BMW. He came out here to Bathurst a couple of times to drive for BMW, the M3. Interesting to see the fact that he's now made the move across to the new DTM 2000 program. A number of other named drivers going to across to that series. Laurent Aiello still rumoured to be one of the drivers who will go across to drive in the new DTM 2000. As well, there's talk that Audi are going to become involved via a privateer team. But one of the other very interesting stories this week is the fact that there is a possibility that there could be a Orica Viper, a third car being put together for the Petties, Richard, Kyle and Adam, to run in the Rolex 24-hour race at Daytona. The talk is as well that Petty Enterprises will switch its Winston Cup operations from Pontiac to Dodge in 2001, so there could very well be a Petty Blue number 43 Team Orica Viper GDSR on the grid at Daytona later in this week. If that's the case, I think that'll be very interesting to see how people respond to that, because that'll be the first time that King Richard Petty will have been seen in a race car since he retired from Winston Cup racing in 1992. Amazing how, given enough time and money, a lot of these guys will come back just for the fun of it. It's good to see. Of course, at the same time, there's rumours in the USA around Michael and Mario Andretti's intention to start their own champ team car in 2001. It's very likely that if they do start their own team, it will have Toyota links, because they're both involved in a Toyota dealership in Pennsylvania. So I would say that who knows where we'll see in 2001 Team Andretti. It's a possibility with a Toyota back car. At the same time, Mario's been linked to drives with both Audi and Pinoz in the 2000 Le Mans 24-hour. So who knows, he may find himself another driver there if he's got anything in mind. He might come up with a privateer Toyota. Take something from Toyota Team Europe, because they're now currently just going flat out Toyota Team Europe in terms of getting their Formula 1 car going. And apparently their lead sports car driver, Martin Brundle, is going to be doing a lot of work with that team in terms of getting it set up and running.
All right, we're just waiting for the sprint cars to get out on the track. They've currently got super stocks out there on the track at Premier Speedway at Warrnambool, and we're just actually waiting for the sprint cars to arrive out on the circuit so we can get all the news from there.
Yeah, and we've got other news this week that Cameron McConville has secured himself a full-time drive in the 2000 Shell Championship Series with Rod Nash Auto Pro Team. So Cameron McConville, he'll be moving across there to drive full-time for Rod Nash. Interesting to see how he goes there. It'll be a case of, I suppose, he's going to help Rod Nash step up a level, because he's got Cameron McConville's got experience with the Holden Racing team, along with a few other top-line teams. But of course, one of the downsides of him actually signing with Nash is that he will now miss out on his Daytona 24-hour drive, because the team owner, Rowan Skay, just decided that he wanted somebody in the lineup who's going to commit to the whole season of the American Le Mans Series, whereas Cameron wouldn't be able to do that because of conflicts with dates and so on. So, but good to see Cameron McConville getting himself a full-time drive in the Shell Series. And at the same time, there's a few other bits and pieces going on around the place, and hopefully next week we'll have a bit more news, because as I say, we've got a couple teams making major announcements on their sponsorship this week, including Paul Morris, Brad Jones, and I think there's somebody else for a launch this week as well. I'll have to keep our eyes and ears open on that one.
All right, now with also interesting to see that Oliver Panis has really set his sights on coming down to Melbourne and kicking off the season in strong form, along with a few of the other European drivers. They're looking for a good start of the season, but Eddie Irvine during the week was quite reserved with how he feels Jaguar's performance is going to be, saying if we are running up the front, that means that McLaren and Ferrari are doing something drastically wrong. On the other hand, Johnny Herbert thinks this new car is going to be the best thing since sliced bread. And on top of that, this week announced that Jackie Stewart would no longer be the managing director of Jaguar Racing.
Yeah, it's obviously there's a bit of power play and so on going on within Jaguar / Ford / Stewart Racing, but it's one of those things. No doubt Jackie will take his role in the background. He's still got very, very strong ties with Ford, but I'd say that there's a bit of planning going on there by some people in Ford. Apparently there is a bit of aggravation about the way that Ford/Jaguar has handled the takeover of the team and a lot of the arrangements that were in place, including things like there were some people who were running the Ford motorhome in the paddock area for a number of years, have made a lot of people feel friendly and welcome, and they've been given the flick, and there's a few other people that have that the accountants and they call them the checklist people have given the flick, have been sort of features around Formula 1 for a long time. So it'll be interesting to see where that exactly leads. But as we mentioned earlier on, Jaguar is coming in with a big impact. If people had seen the way that Jaguar received support during the Le Mans sports car races and the World Sports Car Series when TWR Jaguar was running, the Silk Cut Jaguars, etc., they were followed madly around the world. I'd say that we'll see the same again with Jaguar in Formula 1. But now we've got BMW, we have Ferrari, we have Jaguar. All the big names are going to be there. Who's next is the next question, and I suppose we'll wait and see. But Mercedes-Benz, obviously they're doing their thing with their old car. And it's interesting to see that Panez did set fastest time in testing in Barcelona during the week. So obviously he's trying to say, well, if David or Mika have a problem during the year, I'm well and truly in position to drive and drive fast. And I wonder if you might be inviting them both out for dinner a couple of nights before the Grand Prix at a seafood restaurant somewhere in Melbourne.
Yeah, it could be an interesting one indeed. Look, we might take this opportunity to go back now. The Street Rods are having all sorts of fun there at Warrnambool. We might take a few moments now to catch up with all the action from Premier Speedway in Warrnambool as we get
to Australia 9, Dennis Clifford, starting 5. SA 55, Ray Scott from position 6. From position 7, the 2F, driven by California's Brad Furr. On position number 8, the Victoria 30.
In fact, we're getting ready for heat number 1 of the sprint cars, so we will see some sprint car action inside motorsport.
Coming out as 9.
Coming to you tonight with the support of www.sprintcarworld.com.au. We thank them for allowing us to use this live broadcast of the classic from Premier Speedway at Warrnambool.
Top points man from night 1, Chad Keminar out of Ohio. Let's run you through them again. Luke Monty, Phil Chilcott, Adam Baines, David Swain, Dennis Burford, Ray Scott, Brad Furr, Bill Bailey, Donnie Schatz, and Chad Keminar.
So as the sprint cars get ready for heat number 1, we'll be going back to them very, very shortly. And in fact, the speed cars, round 2 of the speed car super series, was underway last night at Parramatta City Raceway. Still waiting to get the event results through. I haven't got the facts through at the moment on how everything panned out there. And also, we've been having a little bit of trouble getting through to Wade Auger, who, of course, looks after us all the information from Parramatta City Raceway. But just as the cars are about to fire up, we go back to Warrnambool.
Donnie Schatz has not appeared, so it appears as though time has run out for them. What a blow to that team. They've already been through the points. Donnie sitting in sixth position, and to drop a heat, well, it could prove absolutely critical for the team. The pace way forward, pace shoot is out there, in position doing his job. Notice Adam Baines assuming pole position along with Phil Chilcott. Luke Monty appearing to hop at the start from the back.
And you've got to love it when the line drops out midway through a report. But just waiting to go back to Warrnambool very shortly as the cars out there on the track, as you could tell. And Heat 1 about to get underway. Looks like Donny Schatz, the man who's set all before him in Australia, is in a little bit of trouble there, not being able to make it out onto the track to get pushed away. So a very big disaster at the start of night number two at Premier Speedway in Warrnambool.
Certainly behind the eight ball. Just buckling into the car. Word has it, Wayne Beams has just had a quick look down in the pits. Word has it that Donny Schatz just buckling in as we speak. The gate's still over at the moment, so still time for him, John.
When I was down in the pits a little earlier, the team still kind of trying to figure out exactly what the problem is. They changed the magneto. That was not the the problem piece. And they were looking at the fuel system the last time, just before they pushed out the start before the super ride heat. So it still didn't sound exactly right when it came off the speedway then. Have to just wait and see if they've got the problem straightened out for Donny Schatz here in heat race number one.
We got the vision from our monitor here in commentary. Now, they are pushing him away. He's just leaving the pits now, but fortunately from where he's situated, he's got a fair journey right looping around the back of the Titan transporters in the pits. And now on his way out onto the racetrack, gate's still open at the moment. So high drama here in the first heat of the night for the American Donny Schatz, desperate to try and advance towards the top of the points and improve a possible starting spot in the A tonight.
Of course, that being the A feature race coming up later on, which of course is the final.
And here comes the Toyota Genuine Parts, Parker Stores and the Shane Tickey Racing Team. Give him a cheer as he hits the speedway, face fans. Good stuff. Let's hope the thing fires and runs okay for Donnie and the team's sake. That's the drivers out there, of course, formed up. Hope he's fairly keen to get into it, but at the same time, I don't think any of them would be too upset. The more laps they run, the more the track packs down a little bit. It's possibly a blessing in disguise for them.
More high drama there as the fire breaking out
from the car. Some sign of the flash, perhaps some minimal oil fire down there on the left rear of the car. We're just watching Donny Schatz as he works his way out of the second corner. Let's hope all is good for that team.
So maybe just a bit of fuel that they had still there on the back of the car when they were changing the fuel system, trying to get the fuel line from the tank toward the engine.
Okay, green flag waving. Luce Monty, who did in the end start from the pole, leads them out of the second corner. Bill Bailey up very high. Adam Baines tucked in behind Phil Chilcott early. Little Brad Fair, monstering manoeuvre up the inside. Got past a couple. Now is focusing in on David Swain in the Victoria 20 car. Donny Schatz almost kicking the concrete through 1 and 2. Unable to better reach the starting position yet. Chad Kemenar beginning to move on through the pack, has advanced 3 places. But Brad Fair, the driver to watch here. On a hiding to nothing, look at Fair. Big lunge in 3. And he cuts the pass with what appeared to be effortless ease. And watch him go as he picks up Adam Baines' position. Phil Bailey goes through on David Swain down the back. But Luce Monty, this rookie West Australian driver, performing with distinction here. Fur now has gone past Chilcott. Well, that's for the progress of Donny Schatz. He's starting to work mid-track. He's picked off a couple of positions. And still, 5 laps for Donny Schatz to try and grab some more points here. Chad Kemenar sitting just in front of him. Then it's David Swain. Phil Bailey up ahead of them. Bailey now looking to pass Baines into one as Brad Fair attacks our leader. Lucy, can he stave off this big challenge? The Eagle chassis working beautifully early on. The Gertie engine singing a nice tune, and here's a chance for him into 3. It's been a favourite part of the circuit for him, making the big lunge up the inside. Fair tucked right in his draft at the moment as they work 1 and 2. Kemenar has been passed by Donny Schatz. Ran a little high, and Donnie now will attack Swain, Bailey, and Baines. As our leader's going to 1 and 2, look at 4. Trails level with Monty out of 2. Down the back shoot, the West Australian, not giving an inch. Saying, no waste, son, I won't take a heap. And it won't have gone, he does just that.
It sounds like there's a bit of problem here with some of the breakups of the signal that we're getting.
Matt Terminar and David Swain appear to have come together. Swain has gone up and over. Chad Kemenar just getting across the line in front of Dennis Burford and Ray Scott. And Donnie Schultz in the end, I guess, finishing in about fourth or fifth position. Really drove hard in the dying stages. The red flag is out. Leach Monty parking the car. It'll be a good opportunity for our man down on the infield to have a chat to him. What a big drive from the West Australian rookie pilot. The American showed him his nose on a couple of occasions, and I guess the telling incident was in Turn 3 where Luce Monty denied Brad Furr a clear path through to the lead of that event. Fingers crossed for David Swain. We'll hope that he's all right. Car still sitting rather precariously up on the fence at the moment.
Well, sprint cars always giving us plenty of action. Coming from Warrnambool Speedway, Premier Speedway, out there at Warrnambool, of course, the Grand Annual Classic, as we get on, ready Dave. For more action. But at the moment, the crash crew is getting that car off the back fence, so we'll keep you informed right throughout the night of how the Grand Annual's going.
We'll get a report on it shortly. Tough way to end opening heat of the night for David Swain in the Victoria 20 entry. Helmets now off down in turn one. Over to you, Stuart.
Yeah, we've got Luke Smiley down here, Luke. He had a great serve on your tail there those last couple of laps. That must have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, pretty hard.
And are you happy with taking out this heat win on the second night of the Classic?
Yeah, my first win, yeah, I like it. Yeah, it's great.
We wish you all the best. Hopefully we see you up there a bit later on.
Thanks a lot.
Good work, Stuart. We'll get a report on the David Swain race car situation down there in turn four, if you can check that out for us. Yeah, we should make a quick correction to the program. I noticed earlier Stuart had handed me some information here. The 10-lap track record is now standing at 154.31. That's as per the board down there in turn four, not as it reads in your program. So a quick amendment there. Peter Murphy, who's here watching this weekend, unfortunately not racing, as you know, but does hold that record. It was set on December 12 at the World Series around this season, Stuart. Is that correct? Yep. Dead right. Okay, we'll look to get word from Turn 4 shortly, but we'll move straight into the starting positions for heat number 12. You've got your programs at the ready. The results provisional, obviously, for the previous heat. Just before we do the starter, Stuart.
Yeah, just having a look at the David Swain Ken Blast Industrial Coatings Hungry Hound Pet Treats race car out of Cobden. The front end is obviously dropped out of the car, all the bits and pieces that fold on there, and also the driver line and rear end of the car that's also dropped out. So bad luck there for David Swain, who's currently running second in the SRA points, the local series here in Victoria. So bad luck for David Swain.
Okay, thank you for that. Should mention too that fastest heat last night was a 158.4. Brooke Tatnall set that in heat 7 when he was in blistering form from the rear and taking it out. Beautiful race it was. Let's check out the starters. South Australia 28, Darryl Wright listed as your pole sitter here. Victoria 24, Steve Knight from position 2. Queensland 5, Darryl Hodges out of 3. Victoria 60, Rob Rankin from position 4. Queensland 36, Troy Shields. Correction, Victoria 36, Troy Shields out of 5. New South Wales 6, John Shaw from position 6. Aussie 1, Phil March out of 7.
Of course, that Australian title getting decided next weekend, and Colin, it's going to be an interesting weekend next weekend. We'll have all the results, of course, from this event, the Warrnambool Classic, and also we'll be speaking to the newly crowned Australian Sprint Car Champion. So that one, a very exciting meeting at Speedway City. It'll be over Friday and Saturday nights, and www.sprintcarworld.com.au will have live commentary once again from the track. And if you're enjoying this, you can also log on to sprintcarworld.com.au and listen to it right throughout the night. And of course, Triple S staying with it for a little while longer, I'm sure. Guess a few people have to decide what they're going to do a bit later on. But anyway, we'll certainly enjoy to hear a lot more about the Sprint Cars as the season here in Australia really gets to the pointy end. Look, Parramatta City Raceway last night was the second round of the Speedcar Super Series, as round number one last weekend held down Avalon saw Dave Lambert take the victory. Well, this weekend it was Adam Clark who picked up the points from Stephen Graham, and then third place going to Ray Brown. So Clark, Graham and Brown pick up the points at the NASA Speedcar Masters Series there, and I'm not sure, I think they head up north for round number three next weekend.
And just in some other international news, the interesting news this week that in that American Le Mans Series, that Silverstone has now decided that they will take up a round of the American Le Mans Series. They'll actually have a race there where they'll be combined in a double meeting alongside the FIA GT cars. The cars from the American Le Mans Series will race in a 500-kilometre event on the Saturday evening, with the GTs running a 1,000-kilometre event the following day. So if you're a sports car fan, that'd be one to really pick up, because you'd see the best of both series. The other news that has been running around the UK for a while is regarding the future of the British Touring Car Championship, with talk that Toker had lost out control of the British Touring Car Championship from 2002 to British Motorsport promoters, with the Motorsports Association apparently handing over control to that new body, which by instance is partly controlled by Brands Hatch Limited Chief Executive Nicola Folsom's brother. The word since is that things were not as they appeared early on. There's still talk that Toker may continue to be the body promoting the British Touring Car Championship for some time to come. But in news this week as well, the fact that Toker had done a deal with the British Racing Drivers Club to link up with them, so with their super production car class, the National Saloon Car Championship in the UK, which is where they're getting the Class B cars for the British Touring Car Championship, so they wouldn't clash, and so that they could cooperate and work together. So Alan Gow, as always, finds a way to get himself looking good.
All right, the cars out on the track for heat number two, featuring this one, the Australian champion, Phil Marsh and Danny Lasowski. They've just taken the green and working their way onto the main straight to complete their first lap.
Maxim, working beautifully here at the moment. A little bit of work from Maxwell Dino tune during the week in Adelaide has really got the engine humming along superbly. Carol Hodges, the Queenslander, battling desperately there in second place. Rob Rankin with Phil Marsh on his tail. John Shaw is next, and Randy Hannigan not able to make any advancement at the moment. Steve Knight in the Victoria 24 car, looking good as he crosses the line out by about 4 or 5 car lengths. Oh, coming together there, John Shaw and Phil March. Randy Hannigan tucks a bit of a slider on John Shaw as well. 5 laps remaining. Danny Lasowski, residing in Dover, Missouri, the 40-year-old absolute Penfield World of Outlaws gun, second in last year's championship, really starting to come to grips with this racetrack. The two-night format will certainly suit him. He'd be used to that from the States. Down the main straight they come again. Lasowski not really making much of an impression on Hodges here. The gap between them has remained constant for a couple of laps now. It's about 2 or 3 car lengths. Around comes Rob Rankin doing nicely in fourth. Phil March about to put some pressure on him from fifth. And it's Randy Hannigan from John Shaw in the Havilland car. The white flag now out. And the Victoria 24 car, a Steve Knight for JK Racing, about to come around and accept the checkered flag for the second heat of the evening. Well done to him, Darrell Hodges, runner-up from Dan Lasowski third. The important thing there for the dude is that he will slightly bridge the gap on Chad Kemenar in the points. Beyond that, Rob Rankin, who drove quite a nice race from Philip Marsh, Randy Hennigan, and John Shaw.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.